Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we try to cover the stories the mainstream media is largely ignoring. We're going to deep dive tonight. What is going on at the U.S. border? You've heard about the stories of people pouring across the southern border, 10 to 15,000 of illegal immigrants per day. But what you might not know is the massive amount of NGOs that are involved in this story. We're going to sit with J.J. Carroll tonight on the show, who just returned from the border. He just returned from San Diego, Imperial Beach. Now, J.J., of course, was a former border U.S. Border Protection agent for 24 years. And what he saw is just unbelievable. He was texting me earlier, and it's just unbelievable. So we're going to have J.J. on to talk about what is actually happening at the border tonight.
Plus, we're going to talk about a shocking admission from AstraZeneca about the effect of its COVID vaccines. Are they apologizing for it? Not really, but they're acknowledging it. Will they pay for it? No, taxpayers will pay for it. It's a shocking story. You're going to want to stick around for that.
Also, you know the food pyramid? Well, it's a total lie. We're going to get into exactly how it's constructed and why during this period of inflation that we're experiencing right now, this is all meant to keep you from eating good food, healthy food. It's meant to hide, of course, the effects of inflation. We're going to dive into the food supply tonight and what this means for our overall health and the Biden administration's propaganda around inflation and our food supply.
Plus, the president of Portugal says that Portugal should pay reparations for the slave trade, but he has only one group that he's focused on for paying these reparations. Plus, he wants it from the working class of Portugal. He ignited a firestorm inside of Portugal, so we're going to have a guest on to talk about whether or not the Portuguese should be the ones to pay a reparation and to whom.
So good to see you all on this Tuesday. Good to see you. Let us know where you're joining us from. Oh, we are live on Rumble. We are live on YouTube. Good to see everyone. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world. We are also live on X as well. So good to see everybody. We're going to get into our top story here in just a moment. But first, I was just cleaning out the closet this weekend and was going through and making some donations of some shirts and some different pants.
Yes.
And when I got to my Mack Weldon shirts, I was like, nope. These are my favorite shirts. These are my favorite t-shirts. These are my favorite pants. And Mack Weldon is sponsoring tonight's show, so we really thank them. If you go to MackWeldon.com, you can get 20% off if you use the code REDACTED on your first order. They make my favorite t-shirts, really fantastic pants, and it really does fit any style, any time of day. You know, you're thinking, oh, I can't wear this, and then I've also got to go to this casual meeting later. They have so many choices that you can compile all at the same time. They have the best of the best they can put together. So if you want a sort of somewhat of a business look, but it's still a little casual and you're not too uncomfortable all day and you're sweaty trying to make your way around a big city or whatever it is, they've got all of these fantastic designs that you can pick from. And their underwear, fantastic. Some of my favorite underwear, by the way. Guys, you got to check them out. Super breathable, really fantastic. They look like regular clothes, but they're modern comfort. Very, very stylish. And if you want to look great without even trying. And they have this amazing air knit underwear, which I'm telling you is fantastic, especially during the summer. Crazy comfortable. Go to MackWeldon.com. Use the promo code REDACTED. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code REDACTED. Get 20% off your first order. Thanks to Mack Weldon. Well, could the invasion at the U.S. southern border be even worse than we imagined? Is that even possible? Well, that's exactly what our next guest just found. J.J. Carroll is a 24-year veteran of the Customs and Border Protection. He traveled as part of a new documentary called Treason that he's working on. One of the first stops, though, was at Imperial Beach in San Diego, his old stomping grounds, to see how much it's changed in a few short years. And this is, of course, the main invasion point into the United States. And what he found in just a few short years from leaving the Customs and Border Protection under Joe Biden is astonishing. Watch.
Okay. I want you to understand, America. You got people sleeping in gutters. You got in the rain walk. You got over here. You got this. This is what I'm trying to tell you, America. When we say we're going to go on a mission to teach you what the hell's going on, if this is treason or not, this is treason. Look at this. Look at this. Just people. They look like burritos stacked on top of each other. You got to understand, United States Border Patrol, 100 years in our history, 97 years, we never did this shit. This never existed. If I showed Border Patrol agents that you had illegal aliens in America, sleeping and living in America with bonfires, people from Africa, Middle East, all of them, military age men, all of them. Look at them. All of them military age men. You think any of these people give a crap about America? Any of them. Any of them. Look at what we got. This is America now.
All right. And JJ joins us now back home safely in South Dakota. JJ, welcome back to the show. I mean, it's been obviously not in uniform since you've been there. It's been a few years in uniform. You were back there to do interviews for when you were working on your book. But how much has that spot changed since you were last there?
It completely changed. This never happened. As I said in the video, this has never happened. Meaning, I spent 24 years, I spent 10 years in that area in fighting for my life, literally fighting for my life in that area. And people running from you and chasing them to the fence and tackling them and putting them, making them submit to put the handcuffs on them. Now they're actually living on the US side, burning tires to keep them warm. And here's the biggest thing. God put inside me, as he did a lot of law enforcement officers, especially the guys that I consider very good. We can tell instantly and almost like that who's good and who's bad. Meaning, I know when somebody is just, okay, that's going to be a farmhand and that person is going to be a maid and that person is going to kill somebody. That person is going to rape someone. That is a pedophile right there. When I walked around those 75 to 100 men, they were from the nation of India, from the continent of Africa, and from the Middle East. I, for the first time in a long time, felt extremely unsafe. And I knew, and I looked them in the eye, and they looked me square in the eye. I knew that they were criminals. And here's the difference back. And it's not like it's 30 years ago, Clayton. 3 years ago, I was wearing a uniform down on that border. 3 years ago. Here's the difference. 3 years ago, I owned that piece of land. Now, they look at me as if I'm the trespasser on their property. They own that. I'm walking on their land. That is how insane this has gotten. And I'm telling you.
And that's how it comes across. When you were walking there, I felt nervous for you just seeing the video. I mean, it looks like you are a stranger in a strange land.
I was walking on soil that I dominated, that I owned, and that I spilled blood on. And other people's blood to keep America safe. So did all the men and women in the Border Patrol. We turned it over. They actually believe they own it. I'm trespassing in there. I did not feel safe. I'm a big man and I'll fight my way out of it. But I knew there was a probability, dude, you're gonna have to fight. This is not safe on any level. But I need America, and I want your audience to understand, and I want to articulate this as clearly as I can. Everything that you think is bad, it's worse. Everything that you think is being done behind closed doors is worse. I want you to think of, we are being invaded, and it is almost, Clayton, as I have done these interviews and now that I have been able to piece things together through investigation and speaking to other journalists, I truly believe that this is like a military movement into America. It has all the signs of it because it's multiple strategic invasion points. Multiple strategic people are moving the parts into America. At the end of Joe Biden's term, which is only about 8 months away, Clayton, he will have allowed in at least 25 to 30 million people into America. Try to wrap your brain around that. It's
unsustainable, insanity. As Elon Musk has been tweeting about this, right? The legal migration is one thing. But the United States, even just allowing an additional 1% population into the United States, is devastating to the United States resources, our law enforcement, our disease, dealing with the hospitals. Hospitals have been overrun with illegal immigrants. That's something that's not being reported at all, but that's exactly what's happening. Speak to nurses, speak to doctors. This is what's happening in U.S. hospitals right now. Illegal immigrants flooding in, and who's paying for it? Of course, the U.S. taxpayers are footing the bill for all of this. So when you were there, you're seeing these military-age men, bonfires all along the border, inside the United States, camped there. And I think, you know, you and I spoke off camera a little bit about how this is being orchestrated. And so I think you said, imagine, picture, if you will, how bad it is. And then you're not even close to imagining, like, understanding how bad it actually is. Can you talk a little bit about the lengths to which these NGOs and the United States government are facilitating all of this across the border?
The NGOs are the linchpin to all of this, because the federal government, without the NGOs, cannot continue on this. And the individuals that I interviewed, and I had one individual in particular that was, he wrote the checks, literally wrote the checks to the NGOs, okay? And I said, explain to me in detail how this works. And he says, you have to understand this from the perspective of the federal government created a complete chaotic destruction of the border, but they do not have the resources, the manpower, the transportation units to move millions of people from the border into the interior. Thus, they need the NGOs. He says the federal government needs the NGOs so badly that the NGOs now run the government. And I actually had to say, pause in my interview. You got to explain that to me. He said, okay. He said, we're averaging between 7, 10, 15,000 illegal aliens crossing the border every day. He said, JJ, within a week, you're at 150 to 200,000 illegal aliens in America living on the border. In 2 weeks, you're at 250,000. At a month, you're at 400, 500,000. What does that look like? And I'm like, yeah, it's absolute a media nightmare that we're allowing suffering on our border. He said, so in order to continue this invasion, you can't have bodies stacked on top of each other by 500,000, 1,000,000. You have to have an apparatus in place, a machine that transports them and distributes 30 million people into America. And he says, that's how the power they have. And I said, well, how does it look when you cut a check? I said, give me an example of you cutting a check. And he goes, okay, I cut a check for $600 million. And I said, for what, like a 3-year contract? He goes, no, for a month or two, to one, not the a dozen, two dozen of the major players, but to one. And I said, okay, well, since you cut the check, do you follow that money? Like, or you're the accountant and you, he just laughed at me. He laughed at me. He said, there's no accounting. This is our emergency funds given to them and they do whatever they want. Nobody cares. The federal government, when you look at it, Clayton, from this perspective, the federal government wants to destroy America by flooding illegal aliens into America. It's indisputable. I don't even want to argue with people anymore. That's the fact. In order to do that, they have to spend tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars to do that. Do they care? No, just get it done. And that is what we're seeing with the partnership. And it's really not a partnership. The NGOs now have become the contractor and the U.S. government is the subcontractor. It's crazy.
So when we're talking about this check being cut, and I know you don't want to disclose sources here on who's cutting the check, but this is a U.S. government employee cutting a check, or he's a sort of a liaison between the government and an NGO that's cutting these checks? So this is coming from the Department of Homeland Security. This is coming from the Department of Justice. Where's this pile of money exist?
These are DHS employees. So I want you to think of like a giant conference room. And there's multiple DHS employees, and they're cutting checks. Government employees are cutting checks directly to the NGOs for hundreds, if not billions of dollars. It's federal money. It's coming from FEMA pot. And I also heard this. My sources told me the NGOs run FEMA. FEMA doesn't run the NGOs. The NGOs tell them what they're going to do. The NGOs tell the government, not only this is what I need, you're going to pay me this amount to do these things. And when I need more, I'm going to call you and you're going to give me more. And I said, well, what does that look like? He says, well, a subcontractor says, I need COVID tests. During COVID, Clayton, do you know how much it cost the federal government to administer one COVID test and read the results? $2,000 a COVID test. $2,000. And listen to what my source said, and this is brilliant. It's brilliant. It's just brilliant. I'm Jewish Family Services. I move 500 people from San Diego on planes and buses to Maine. I still have people coming here, so now I have to move those people from Maine to, say, Michigan. The cost just keeps spinning. So after I move them to Maine, I'm going to retest those 500 people for COVID at $2,000 a pop to move them to Michigan. And he goes, all they're doing, my sources tell me, all the NGOs are doing is just moving a giant shell game of 1,000 people there, 2,000 people there, 50,000 people there. So imagine if you're in a business and I'm contracting with you, Clayton, and I'm saying, Clayton, you have to take care of 10,000 packages for me every day.
Then
you tell me it's going to cost you $5,000 a package. I don't care because I have endless money I can print. And this is just rolling out. So we are looking at, and I don't want a black pill because this is America. We can overcome anything. But I'm telling you, the farther we slide down this hill, the more bloody it's going to be to get us back up. We are at 45 million illegal aliens in America right now. This is congressional testimony, 45 million. Some people believe that it's already surpassed 50. 45 million illegal aliens. You said Elon Musk, and I saw that tweet, 1% destroys, 1% of our population of illegal aliens will cripple America. If there's 45 million, we're at about 13, 14% of the population. If you and I argue and say, okay, let's say I'm 50% wrong, you're still at about 22, 25 million. So you're right. Still about 7, 8, 9% of the population. So when you have people that are aligning now, major voices, Elon Musk, probably the biggest voice outside of Trump, is saying, this is all going to crumble. I am a guy that's been in there for 24 years. I'm telling you, it's crumbling. I'm telling you, the machine is so big now, Clayton, that I do not see it being able to be dismantled and broken down because it's too much money, too much power.
How many NGOs do you think we're talking about here? I mean, if you had to guess, how many are operating and are getting
thousands? This is hard to.
Well, I could imagine why this would make sense. I think the reason why that makes sense, right? Because if you got four of them, then we know their names. We expose them. Mm-hmm. We talk about them. But you've got thousands of little mom and pop operations that are moving 5, 10, 16 people around the country, much harder to track, much harder to find scrutiny and bring scrutiny upon those individuals, right?
That's how they launder the money. That's how they wash it. So if you're the federal government, Mayorkas, and we're going to see this because you're already seeing child rape, women being raped, murders skyrocketing across America because the NGOs have brought them all over. Federal government's going to say Jewish Family Services did it. Jewish Family Services is going to say, well, I have 100, 200 subcontractors underneath me. They did it. Well, who are those subcontractors? Well, they just changed their names. There's no way to trace them. And I asked my source this, even though I knew the answer, I wanted on tape. I said, who's vetting the NGOs, the people working for the NGOs? He says, no one is vetting anyone. We're talking about taking young unaccompanied alien children and trafficking them across state lines. And nobody knows who's doing it. Think of that. Child Protective Service in California can't bring children to Nevada. There's a process that has to happen. We have people that we have no idea. I have inside information. They're saying the people that are moving these children are all felons. The people driving the buses that are buses driving them all over America are felons. This is the biggest story that is going to unravel in the next couple years and decade. And we are going to hear stories that are going to sicken you. But I'm pre-warning you, everything that I knew was happening, I knew it. I even miscalculated how successful and how brilliant their plan is. And I have to applaud them. I'm going to have to applaud Mayorkas. I can't stand them. I can't stand the Democrats and the Rhino Republicans. But I will, as an intellectually honest person, say to my adversary, you guys are incredible. You are rock stars. If you could put forth that energy to make America prosper, no one on the planet could touch us in any level of any type. But you have taken all of your energy, time, talent, treasure, and all of your intellect to destroy America, and you are winning.
Well, JJ's new documentary is called Treason. I know you're just starting the process. This was really the first leg of it. And what you've uncovered in this first leg is terrifying. I can't wait to see what else you uncover with this. And JJ, of course, also the author of the great book called Invaded. I highly recommend you all read it. JJ, I'll just get you out of here real quick. What's the timeline, do you think, on the documentary, and where do you think you're going next?
We are going to Chicago, and then we will head out to New York and Boston, and then back down to the border in Texas. We will be done by the summer, and we hope to release it in September or early October at the latest. You can go to GiveSendGo/SaveInAmerica. We are self-funding. The production company obviously put forth all the majority of the money, but the costs are exorbitant. So if you could go, even as your audience has already been so generous, just even if you had $5, it adds up and allows us to go further, interview more people, conceal their identity. Because here's the other thing, Clayton. Everyone wants to talk to us, but no one wants to talk to us because they're scared to death of being fired, being jailed by our own government. And I'm not getting classified information because I would not allow them to do that because I know that put you in jail. This is all unclassified. This is open information. But they're scared to death. I have to block them out. I have to change their voice. I can't even show a silhouette of them. So I just actually have a black screen because our federal employees are so nervous about their own employer, the federal government. That's how bad things have gotten in America. And you say, well, why don't they become a whistleblower? My God, have you seen what's happened to the whistleblowers? They've lost their jobs. They get threatened to go to jail. Why would anyone in their right mind be a whistleblower? So this is bigger than even what I envisioned. And I am a little concerned, and I do have some, I don't know if fear is the right word, but as I'm moving forward with this, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I can't wait to tell the story because I will not remain silent. I will not be part of the problem. I have to be part of the solution, no matter what that may entail for me. And I appreciate your time you always give me.
Well, God bless you. And our audience has been amazing. We'll put a link in the description if anyone wants to donate to the documentary, like $5, $10, just anything will help move this along so JJ and his team are able to do more interviews and bring and shine a light on this. So, well, thanks for the amazing work already, JJ. And we'll check back with you as this story unfolds in Chicago and these other spots along the way. We appreciate it. Thank you, JJ.
Thank you, Clayton.
Thanks, JJ. Unbelievable to see some of the footage from the border and to see what these NGOs are actually doing to move these individuals around the country is, there's no other word for it. It is treason. So thanks to JJ and the great team, Ryan Mata and the others who are working on this great project. So thank you guys for your support as well. Many Redacted viewers have also signed on and been able to pledge their support for this documentary. This is a grassroots effort to get this documentary made to shine a light on what's happening in the United States. So thank you to everyone. We'll have a link in the description for people to check that out.
All right. Well, we have more news to get to. We're going to talk about the AstraZeneca admission about their vaccine. Now, you might say, I already know this. A lot of us already did, but this is actually the first time they've admitted it. 3 years later, it's completely unacceptable, and taxpayers will be paying the settlements of the harmed families. It's outrageous, so stick around. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about corruption in the food chain, and we're going to talk about whether or not Portugal owes reparations and to whom, because that's what their president recently suggested. But first, we want to tell you about our show sponsor, which is Aura. Speaking of invasion, you probably feel invaded by your spam calls, emails. That's only going to get worse, folks, as we move into the hot election season. because everybody wants your attention. But it turns out data brokers are selling your personal information and making a fortune from it. Your full name, your email, your home address, your health records, your relatives, it's all out there. And it's legal for them to do that. So Aura's approach is a game changer. It's not just a band-aid where you unsubscribe one by one or keep texting stop to these alerts. Instead, they find out who's selling your information and they take you off these lists. So it doesn't just block spam calls and emails. They're going to the source. They also have a bunch of other features to keep you safe and productive online, like antivirus, VPN, password management, and even identity theft insurance. So if you'd like to check out their buffet of services, head on over to aura.com/redacted. You can start a free 2-week trial just for our listeners. Aura.com/redacted. You also can click the link below. All right. Well, AstraZeneca was forced to admit that its COVID vaccine can cause blood clotting and that can be lethal. The pharmaceutical company did this not out of goodwill, and they felt like they should disclose that so that you could have informed consent when you take their products. Oh, no. That wouldn't be funny, right? That would be ethical. No, they did this because they were forced to do this in a lawsuit in court. So before we take a look at what they're saying, think for a second. Now, we were all told that every one of the COVID vaccines, and there were 3 or 4 of them to choose from, were safe and effective. The government told us that blanket vaccination was the only way to go, irrespective of health, of previous infection, nothing, right? We got nothing. If there had been longer trials, honest media, and an honest biopharmaceutical industry, we'd have been told the various risk factors that they did know about, but we weren't. Now, AstraZeneca has been sued by people who were severely harmed or died after taking the vaccine. In court this week, the documents were released in February, but they were only published this week. The company acknowledged that its vaccine can, this is what they're saying, in very rare cases, cause TTS. What that is thrombosis with thrombocytopenia syndrome. It's a medical condition where a person suffers blood clots along with very low platelet count. Platelets typically help the blood to clot. Now, AstraZeneca and the UK knew this at least since March of 2021. So think about it. The first vaccines were administered in December 2020. By March, they already had reports of people having these very serious reactions and some death. But they did not pull it from the market until May. So we know they knew by March, but they didn't take it off for 2 or 3 months later. So in the interim, all of those people who were hurt have a claim to the government saying, why didn't you tell us this if you knew so early? Now, I contend AstraZeneca probably knew this way before March. They must have known this from any clinical trials that they did and did not publish. But what we know for sure is that the government knew by March. Not only were we not given the truth, therefore we had no way to offer informed consent, the taxpayers will be paying the settlements of people who are suing.
What?
So take a look at this.
Because of indemnity?
I'll show you. Take a look at this screen.
Sons of bitches.
Taxpayers will foot the bill of any potential settlements because of an indemnity deal that AstraZeneca struck with the government in the darkest days of COVID to get the jabs as quickly as possible, produced as quickly as possible, while the country was paralyzed by lockdowns. This comes just days after the firm reported revenue exceeding 10 billion pounds in the first quarter of 2019. Now, in a statement about people who were harmed severely, AstraZeneca gave this, we give our sympathy to anyone who has lost loved ones or reported health problems. Sympathy, you notice their lawyers are probably saying you can't take responsibility. You can't say you're sorry. You can only offer sentiment, which is sympathy. Here's what they went on to say in their statement. It says, I just want to point out this word. You see how I'm pointing out the word acceptable here? You see the energy I'm putting into that? They say, from the body of evidence in clinical trials and real-world data, the AstraZeneca vaccine has continuously been shown to have acceptable safety profile. Okay. Acceptable to who exactly? Acceptable to this lady. This is Mel Stewart, Before she took the vaccine, she was a stage actress. She was a working stage actress after she had a debilitating stroke, which, according to the UK's own government page, is not as uncommon of a reaction. Take a look at this page. Now, the UK government is saying this is archived. This is what we had originally said, but we don't necessarily feel this way anymore. Just to let you know, this is archived information. But they're showing the side effects as 1 in 1,000 will have one-sided facial drooping. That's not rare. 1 in 1,000?
That's not, yeah. Is that acceptable?
Who finds that acceptable?
No way.
I'm. Would you rather get COVID or?
I mean,
given the fact that we know that the vaccine does not prevent the transmission, but at the time you're thinking, would I rather get COVID or I may have facial paralysis?
Yeah, I may permanently be paralyzed in my face, maybe parts of my body.
Right. Take a look at the next, what they're saying, very rare. They're saying 1 in 10,000 is very rare. Again, that's not, I look at these vaccine trials all the time as reporting for this show. 1 in 10,000 is not what you'd consider a very rare chance of something like this. Like severe nerve inflammation, which may cause paralysis and difficulty breathing, which is this Guillain-Barré syndrome, or this clotting. So that seems like you're really rolling the dice, but we were never given these numbers to make any kind of choice, which we absolutely should have. Take a look at this.
Someone outside in says that's a stroke-like symptom, right?
Which is, yeah.
The facial paralysis, of
yes.
course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
So you're signing up for that. That's acceptable.
1 in 1,000. I mean, I can't imagine sitting down and being like, roll the dice.
Right.
You know,
it's like Russian
roulette.
If you
had known that.
I mean, you have 1 in 6 chance in Russian roulette, I guess. But I mean, still 1 in 1,000. I'm not taking that. And I'm certainly not taking that with my children.
That's 1,000 people per million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so how many millions have been given? That's a lot of people.
Right. Well, they're not reporting the risk of death, but the official UK government information shows that more than 80 people died from this. So in the UK alone, after complications of taking this specific COVID vaccine. So I guess I don't know how many people are in the UK who were vaccinated, but it seems about right, this ratio of either a severe reaction, being left as if you're rehabilitating from stroke or death, such as this BBC presenter, Lisa Shaw, who was only 44, I believe.
Good afternoon. A coroner has concluded the BBC Radio Newcastle presenter Lisa Shaw died after complications of the AstraZeneca COVID vaccination. Lisa, who was 44, died in May, 3 weeks after being given her first dose of the vaccine. Well, our news correspondent Mark Denton was at the inquest at Newcastle Civic Centre this morning and joins us now. Mark.
Well, Jeff, the inquest heard that Lisa initially developed severe headaches at home. She was treated first in hospital in Durham and she was then transferred to the Royal Victoria Infirmary in Newcastle, where she sadly died. Now, in her conclusion, the senior Newcastle coroner, Karen Dilks, said it was clearly established that Lisa's death was due to a vaccine-induced thrombotic cytopenia. Now, that is a condition which leads to blood clots and swelling of the brain. The coroner said it was a very rare condition.
Okay, so that's exactly the condition that we're talking about in these cases, TTS. Now, her husband says that... Now, again, think about it. She died in early May. I think it was the first few days of May, 10 days after vaccination, which puts her vaccination in late April of 2021. And we know for sure that the UK government knew about problems in March. So even in those few weeks between March and April, they continued to let people roll the dice. And then people did die. And now you can see her husband is saying he felt like he had no choice but to sue. This is her husband. He's been left a widow and a single dad because they had a little boy who now is without his mama.
That's awful.
Now, the plaintiffs in this case, she's one of many. But the plaintiffs, or her family is, rather, the plaintiffs in this case say that they have had an uphill battle, even bringing the suits at all. I'd like to tell you who these people are. You're going to see the family of an NHS doctor, Stephen Wright, who was 32 and again died 10 days after the vaccine, leaving his wife and two young children. Watch.
I think the vaccine damage payment scheme needs reform. There's people struggling still, people injured, they're not getting the medical help they need, they're not getting the support they need financially. There's people at risk of losing their homes because they can't work, but there's still...
I mean, ourselves, we had to... And we were one of the first to submit a claim, and there's still people waiting over a year.
Yeah. And did you...
The government, and to protect the children in which you work with.
But the other thing to say as well is that because he worked for the NHS, that was the only reason that he had the vaccination at that time. If he'd been working on any other job, he wouldn't, because of his age group, have had the vaccination so early.
Yeah, and specifically AstraZeneca, by his age group, it would have been pulled and he would have been offered a different one.
Yes. It's not.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
We felt very alone. Yes. And almost that we weren't allowed to speak out. Yes. That we would be killing people if we did speak out.
Yeah. Okay. So
right, that the silence, the censorship, the blocking. We've heard from so many people who've told us that they felt so isolated, they couldn't talk.
Yeah.
They were forced off of Facebook groups where they were sharing adverse events and other things like that. They couldn't share that with the community. They couldn't talk about it. Right.
Well, so what they're specifically saying, and I think it's also worth noting how much we crapped on, not we, but how much the public crapped on Eric Clapton, who had exactly this vaccine.
Right.
And this reaction. And people called him an anti-vaxxer. They said he shouldn't have said anything. Now, what that family was saying was that her husband was an NHS worker, so he got the vaccine early. He had to, because he worked for the National Health Service, because he was considered one of the frontline healthcare workers. But since he was only 32, if he hadn't been forced to take the vaccine early, he would have waited until they opened it up for 30 and over. By that time, that vaccine was pulled. So because he was fast-tracked, he basically was experimented on. And had he then maybe later had gotten a different vaccine, he might not have got this one. Can you imagine how that feels? Like, if only the stars aligned to cost me my husband in this horrific way, and what you have to live with, like all the what ifs, right?
So many people in our chat are asking the question. Here is, let me see what this one was. I feel like I'm living in a simulation, and why aren't people going postal over this? Yeah, Jay Green says, no one going postal over this makes me wonder if I live in a simulation with really bad writing.
I'm going postal right now. This is it.
Well, no, you don't think you're going postal. Well, postal is a whole other level of violence.
Just with the Stephen Wright, who you're talking about, like the... If it had been people over profits, as soon as AstraZeneca knew, they'd have done something, but they didn't, because they knew at that point it was going to get pulled, so then they had to just squeeze out as much profit as they could off of it before they were forced. Their hand was forced.
And that, it's almost like a conveyor belt, like on a factory floor. Like, you know, all of these pieces of food or whatever coming off this conveyor belt right now are toxic. Uh-huh. Right? You know that this is bad for the public, and you have the opportunity to knock them all in the trash.
Well,
right?
You
and
know
lose your profit.
That every one in 1,000 are going to have this like facial paralysis.
Yeah,
this assembly line.
Could you imagine, like, they're there working on an assembly line on a conveyor belt, and you're seeing all of these shots going down the conveyor belt, and you're just like there picking them in a box. One out of every 1,000 of those is going to potentially harm or even kill somebody.
Well, think about healthy 32-year-old Stephen Wright. There was no data at the time that said that Stephen Wright was at risk for severe or deadly COVID. We knew at the time, in what, May of March, April of 2021, that COVID was disproportionately affecting people with comorbidities and the elderly. So there was no reason to pick anybody over 30 that was otherwise healthy and experiment on them. So that's what we're living in. And again, the part that does make me want to go postal is that AstraZeneca does not have to pay any reparations, any settlements, anything. They are carefully trying to not take responsibility for this because they signed over their responsibility to the government. So now taxpayers who were hurt will pay for settlements for this. And I just think it's worth looking at AstraZeneca's profit line since the pandemic, since 2020, is just up, up, and up.
And spiking today on this news, by the way.
I suppose that's true. Yeah,
because over the past 24 hours. Yeah,
I took that chart about 4 hours ago.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Go ahead, David.
I was gonna say, and also like there's things in place that these drugs are supposed to be. So after so many adverse reactions, it's supposed to get a black label. After so many deaths, it gets actually pulled from the market, and it's low. It's like 25 or something like that. But because all of these were had the emergency use authorization, they fall outside of all of that. They fall outside of any repercussions. They fall outside of any legal things people can do. So it's like just because it got that label, they're not, they don't have to deal with the same system that regular drugs that are approved do.
Right.
Yeah.
Someone in the chat says Natalie would be the hottest person ever to go postal. She should do it. People are saying.
Tell them what it looks like, darling.
No, we don't. You don't want to see her going postal.
Remember the ice pick in the eyeball?
Yeah.
Is it better than the ice pick in the eyeball from yesterday?
No. You don't need to see the fiery Natalie with any kind of weapons involved. We don't need that.
Today, the piano teacher was teaching the kids, and she said, "Oh, I can't imagine your mom ever yelling. She's so nice to you." And then Eve climbed in the trunk of a car, and I walked out, and I saw her in the yard, like in the trunk, and Miles was joking, and I was like, What are you doing? That's the dumbest thing. You act like you have some sense. And she was like, oh.
I see it. Now I get
so
it.
So mad. She's seven.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to see that. So this is insane.
Yes, it's insane. It's tragic. And I do want to say the widow that you just saw of that doctor, of that NHS doctor, she is a hero. She was discouraged from bringing her case. The government wasn't even going to allow her to bring this case. And she just kept going after she hit brick wall after brick wall after brick wall. So I think that she's a hero for speaking up for not just her own family, but other families too. Hats off to her. And hopefully it means that other people can go a little bit quicker and find what they need. What they need is to not have had these reactions, obviously, but find something that brings them peace and solace. All right, we're going to move on now. Are you ready?
I am ready. We got more news to get to here. We're going to talk about how cereal is killing us. Cereal, of course, one of the worst things you can put in your body. We're going to talk about that and why the government wants you to do it. The government cover-up of inflation is involved in this. Plus, we're going to talk about should Portugal pay reparations for slavery hundreds of years later. Country of Portugal. This is what the president of the country is proposing. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, let's talk about this. So one way to hide the pain of inflation is to pretend, you know, that it doesn't exist, that you're not actually feeling it. You don't even actually know it's around you because it doesn't exist. One way to pretend it doesn't exist is to feed you highly processed fake food like breakfast cereal. Of course, sure, meat prices are up 50%. But hey, the World Economic Forum doesn't want you to eat meat anyway. Eat highly processed, fake, cheap food with 100 ingredients, you know, seed oils, all sorts of sugars, and you're fine. You'll be fine. The strategy has worked for decades, actually. Most people don't know that breakfast cereal, of course, is one of the worst things you can put in your body, one of the worst things a person can eat. The reason that they don't know this is because you're not meant to know this. The reason most people don't know that this is terrible for you is because the propaganda really works.
Well, I know this because I follow Eddie Abiu. He's a bodybuilder on Instagram, and I suggest to everybody, he goes around the grocery store and picks up boxes of things, and he's like, this is not effing food. Yeah. Don't eat this. It's not food. And like, it's awesome.
That's funny.
It entertains me a lot. So.
But most people don't know it, and it's because the lobbyists and the elites don't want you to know it. And so they don't have, they're, you know, you're fighting up against these guys on Instagram who are telling you the truth about this. But anyway, it's all part of a plan to keep you uneducated about this. Cereal, of course, sits at the top of the food pyramid for a reason, or at the bottom of the food pyramid, I should say. Food pyramid designed to keep you unhealthy with processed food. The food pyramid, of course, it turns out, actually was created in Sweden during the height of inflation in this country in the early 1970s, and then adopted a few years later in the United States. As researcher Brandon Smith points out in a great new piece called Cereal for the Peasants, How the Elites Use Skimpflation to Control Our Eating Habits, he's talked about, you know, the food pyramid is really a stroke of genius. It really is. The Swedish government built a mechanism where they could hide inflation so you don't feel the pain of it behind propaganda. Meat is too expensive. Well, here's our food pyramid. You don't need to eat meat anyway. See, look at the main part of your food pyramid. You want to eat pastas, grains. You know, we want to avoid eating meat. Instead, replace it with cereals and pastas and
that's
carbs.
That's so frustrating.
Then the government,
when you think about it that way.
I know, exactly. And then the government provides lucrative subsidies, of course, to the cereal market, right? All of those cereal, like, can you put that back up on there, Philip, and just people could stare at this and just gawk at this? Because think about that, right? All of the subsidies we think about in our society sit at the bottom, right? To all of the grains, all of the fake foods, all of the processing, that's where we get the government subsidies. So Sweden at the time billed these foods, of course, as cheap and nutritious. That's how they did it. They did this through propaganda. Of course, only one part was true. Yeah, they're cheap, but they're massively spiking your insulin. It could be a reason we have type 2 diabetes, explosion, and obesity epidemic. Recently, a British doctor decided to eat the food pyramid and eat the way that the food pyramid tells us to eat. He switched his normal meat, cheese, dairy diet and decided to try 80% of his diet would now be a highly processed foods, including cereals and grains. So how do you think it went? Watch this.
I'm gonna switch from my normal healthy diet, it's pretty healthy, I eat about 20% ultra processed food, to an 80% ultra processed food diet.
I think it was a bit of sort of culinary genius. You get the bowl of dry cereal, you pour on the milk goes brown, the texture changes, it's all snapping and crackling. You know, an amazing bit of food engineering.
Well, let's start with how you were when we started. So, okay. 4 weeks ago.
Magnificent.
This is...
What would you say? A standard man in early middle age?
Yeah, that is you. After.
I have the increasing man boob.
And also, your stomach is, looks quite.
Yeah.
Your man weight boobs. Went up by 6.5 kilograms in 4 weeks.
That's quite a lot, isn't it?
And your body mass index went up by 2 points, which took you into the overweight range. And then the body fat went up by 3 kilos.
Yeah, so that was just 4 weeks of eating this way. Four weeks of eating the Western way, the World Economic Forum way. So in the 1970s, we saw the explosion of the processed food market. The giant grocery stores emerged. The decline of that butcher shop that you would walk to separately from your dairy and separately from your cheese shop. All of them separate, right? So now all in one big box grocery store. Not coincidentally, this was the decade, of course, when American food was driven right into the toilet in the 1970s. Inflation too hot, don't worry. We can fill your belly on low-cost pasta and cereals. Wash it down with a Dr. Pepper. Sure, you'll get fat and you'll go into a diabetic coma, but that's okay because the food pyramid tells us it's okay. Before lobbyists from the big processed food companies got their hands on America, the American family, of course, put meat, dairy at the center of their diets in the American household. Here's home grocery shopping in the 1950s. What do you notice from this video?
While Julia's out doing the shopping, there are five big neighborhood markets within a couple of blocks of our house, and Julia spreads her shopping around, going where the prices are lowest and the quality best. With 6 mouths to feed, food is a big item in our budget, and we have to make sure we get the most for our money. Every Saturday morning, Julia buys stuff for the entire week, so she takes her time and sees that everything she gets is fresh and good. The vegetables and fruit she buys from one store, her meat from another. We're all big meat eaters in our family, even little Jackie. That means she has to make sure there's plenty to go around.
So do you notice sirloin steak, meats, eggs, dairy, and I'm really picking the meat as the centerpiece of our diet. Last year, Kellogg's, the cereal maker behind such quality products as Corn Flakes, Rice Krispies, and Eggos, lobbied Congress as they do every year. Millions they spend on lobbying Congress. They spent millions lobbying Congress, and they target certain bills that are before Congress, and they assign their names to these bills that they're lobbying on behalf of. They did about 8 of them last year, but here was one that stood out to me that they lobbied on behalf of. This is the Healthy Future Students and Earth Pilot Program, H.R. 4108. For instance, this bill that Kellogg lobbied for, cited the Healthy Future Students Act, is a bill that would provide 100% plant-based processed food for our kids in school. Yeah, all that plant-based processed cereals, processed grains, right in Kellogg's wheelhouse, of course. No meat, of course.
There is a lot of data that plant-based milks are awful for children. I can bring that for you another time.
Yeah, they're really awful.
I mean, not just the plant-based foods, which are usually a conglomeration of hundreds of ingredients and right. highly, highly processed, but the milks especially are really terrible for children.
So it's surprising you bring that up because this bill that I just brought up was first introduced back in 2021. They've been pushing this, Kellogg's has been pushing this bill for years, but speaking of like the milks and stuff, notice who else is on this lobbying
list. Oatly, yeah.
Oatly also throwing their money behind lobbying on behalf of this bill as well.
That stuff is caca.
Yeah.
I tried that in my coffee and blech.
Anyway, it wasn't enough, of course, though, that Kellogg's ruined breakfast and took eggs and meat off the breakfast table and lobbied on behalf of cornflakes and advertising. You know, once the lobbying arms opened up in 1953 on a Supreme Court decision, of course, then it was all, you know, all hell broke loose in the United States. But of course, it transformed the American breakfast with convenience, right? Have your cornflakes first thing in the morning instead of meat and eggs and live a healthy life. No, now you're going to have this highly processed corn. Really? Okay, that's what you're going to eat for breakfast? So Kellogg's ruined breakfast. Now, thanks to inflation, Kellogg's is now trying to get you to eat cereal for dinner as well. Here's the CEO of Kellogg's.
The cereal category has always been quite affordable, and it tends to be a great destination when consumers are under pressure. So some of the things that we're doing is first messaging. We got to reach the consumer where they are. So we're advertising about cereal for dinner. If you think about the cost of cereal for a family versus what they might otherwise do, that's going to be much more affordable. So those are some of the things that we're doing. But in general, the cereal category is a place that a lot of folks might come to because the price of a bowl of cereal with milk and with fruit is less than a dollar. So you can imagine why a consumer under pressure might find that to be a good place to go.
Right.
So that's a whole category, a consumer under pressure.
And who wants to eat cereal for dinner?
Well, yeah.
My daughter doesn't eat cereal like for breakfast, but if I were to put cereal out for dinner, she would flat out murder me. That would be it. Like, that would be the end of me.
Like, what the hell's happened?
Okay, I want to tell you a funny story. Is my friends and I, this was in the early 2000s, we shared this email of like things we want in a boyfriend to get married when we were single. And one of the things that I put on the list is I don't like when people put like full boxes of things in the refrigerator. Like if you have a 6-pack of beer or something, like take the bottles out and put them in the refrigerator, that kind of thing. But one of my top line items was must not think cereal is an acceptable dinner. So I think that shows that person has not grown up.
Yeah.
I used to eat cereal all like dinner.
I did too in the 90s, but because you're always hungry because it spikes your insulin and you're hungry again later. But I'm a grown up.
When I was in college, I had no money and I bought, yeah, again, this is the perfect, like you have no money food and it makes you more hungry. So you eat more of it and it's actually debilitating your body at the same time. So look, we've all been there, but I love that is literally a consumer category for Kellogg's, like the consumer under pressure.
Like
he brings it up multiple times.
We're trying to get people to think of cereal for dinner.
Oh yeah, and they are. And they're rolling out a full advertising campaign to get you as a consumer under pressure, again, hiding inflation, because now inflation's not bothering you at all. Don't worry about it. You've got cereal. Here's Kellogg's new advertising campaign.
When I say cereal, you say dinner. Cereal.
Dinner!
Cereal.
Dinner!
Chicken!
This is not real.
You can have the night off, chicken.
Oh, okay, I'll go marinate.
Cereal!
Dinner!
Cereal!
Dinner!
Wait, no, that's not
Wait,
real.
Wait, that chicken wanted to be cooked? You would think that'd be like...
I know.
Is that a joke?
I'm glad you guys are having cereal. Eat all the cereal you want. I'm going to go...
It's not a joke. That's a real Kellogg's commercial.
They really think that a family should be eating cereal for dinner?
Yeah. And by the way, just to say something...
And are not embarrassed to say that?
Well, I'm embarrassed for the actors. Like that mom, that woman in that ad, and like the husband and the kids that they got. Like,
yeah.
Who... Just to make some money?
Right.
Right? Just to make some money? You know, and then they...
Here you go, kids. I hate you.
Right. So these are the same people that pushed a plant-based diet because inflation is here and it's affecting poor and middle-class people more than anything else right now. Rich people aren't eating bugs. They're eating steak. They're eating real food. Inflation is only getting hotter. And just as like we talked about with the CEO of Lear Capital a few weeks ago, Kevin DeMeritt, that's why we're seeing a huge spike in people running to gold and silver prices because the value of the US dollar keeps getting worse and worse, and they're trying to hide it from you. They're trying to insulate you from even paying attention to it. So have cereal for dinner. That's why when President Biden promotes eating chips during the Super Bowl and junk food, there's a reason behind it. I kept really, I was fascinated by this ad so much. Like I've had this saved in a folder and I've been working on this story for a while because something really bothered me about it, stood out to me that your role at the White House is pushing this narrative about there's fewer chips in a bag. We should be having more chips in a bag, not talking about the fact that meat prices are up 50%. There's no mention of meat, but your favorite snacks, your favorite processed food, we're going to do a White House commercial for it. Watch.
The Super Bowl Sunday. If you're anything like me, you like to be surrounded by a snack or two while watching the big game. You know, when buying snacks for the game, you might have noticed one thing. Sports drinks bottles are smaller. A bag of chips has fewer chips, but they're still charging it just as much. And as an ice cream lover, what makes me the most angry is that ice cream cartons have actually shrunk in size, but not in price. I've had enough of what they call shrinkflation. It's a ripoff. Some companies are trying to pull a fast one by shrinking the products little by little and hoping you won't notice. Give me a break. The American public is tired of being played for suckers. I'm calling on companies to put a stop to this. Let's make sure businesses do the right thing now.
Thanks for sticking up for America and our pain of the processed foods. Let us know your thoughts on this in the comments below.
Did you see the trailer for the new Jerry Seinfeld directed Kellogg's versus Post movie that's coming out?
No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's about cereal.
Well, because he was obsessed with cereal. He still is, I guess, obsessed with cereal. I mean, he always eat it on his show, and he was always eating it first. You know.
Yes, but that character also had Peter Pan syndrome, refused to grow up. And I don't want to begrudge anybody who can't afford to eat anything else, but we should be aspiring to eat better than that. It's like a... This is not for grown-ups. These are not for serious people.
Right. And well, it's sad because this is the economy right now. And so here's a way to use the food pyramid as a piece of propaganda in order to mask the effects of these rising costs of our food supply. I mean, it's really terrible. Someone in the comments just a moment ago said, I bake my own bread. Yeah, I do too. I've learned how to do it. And it's freaking easy, actually. There's only four ingredients in real bread. Mm-hmm. Right? Water, flour, salt, and a leavening agent. That's it. Then you can do other things to it. But then why is bread at the store?
High fructose corn syrup.
Right.
You need high fructose corn syrup in your bread.
Yeah, you need
don't
high.
Forget that. No
so
eggs.
When you, it's amazing to me. Try to go and find bread at the store that doesn't have 100 ingredients in it. It's insane.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know. So this really bothers me. Let me know your thoughts on this in the comments below.
You know, I ate a lot of cereal in high school just because we loved it in the 90s. We were told to eat high carb diets and low fat. And so that fit the bill.
That's my whole point of that segment is that that's the food pyramid. We are being told
but
that
I
you
felt,
shouldn't.
I felt hungry all the time. And I think about like me as a growing teenager eating all that stuff. If
oh, I think
just,
about,
you know,
well, yeah. And this
is, that makes sense because I would get home from school. My mom used to get pissed because I would sit down and eat a whole box of Fruity Pebbles in one sitting when I got home from as a senior.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, you know, junior high school, high school, that was the first thing I would do. I'd eat Rice Krispies, I'd have Cheerios, I'd put sugar on it too, and I couldn't wait to get to the bottom of the milk to get that little scoop of sugar. Yeah. And then, like, I'd get to school, and 10 minutes later, I'd be starving, right? Yeah. I mean, or I'd have a Pop-Tart. I mean, this is the 1980s, right? Growing up in the 1980s, right? You'd have a But our parents were, of course, up against this propaganda. They had three television stations of news broadcast, you know, and they were being, you know, given this information about...
Yeah.
You know, they were being told this is the food pyramid. This is approved by the USDA, right? This is the food pyramid.
Or I would
eat
just white rice. That kind of, like, I shudder at the way that I followed that back in the 90s. Today we had some leftover Indian food from the weekend. And Clayton, I always said, oh, eat this for lunch, honey. And then I spilled half of the rice on the floor. And I was like, I was worried about your glycemic index.
Right.
So that's why I spilled the rice.
So I ate it off the floor.
So he didn't. So he halved the rice.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing if you go back through, like, the actual history of all of this, like a kind of a deeper dive, if anybody's interested, it's fascinating. Because, like, since about the 1920s, the nutritional recommendations from the U.S. government has been coming from lobbyists, not
yes.
doctors, not mm-hmm. scientists, lobbyists. And that's always, like, so everything they're telling you should be eating is coming from lobbyists, from the meat industry, egg industry, and those industries fight each other over their position on the food pyramid, and they have been since the Depression.
Right, and a lot of it comes from Kellogg's, which has roots in, I think, a Seventh-day Adventist or one Christian fundamentalist church where the woman had a vision that we should only eat seeds and fruits like in the Garden of Eden. And the person who helped her publicize her book was one of the Kellogg's. And so the church is deeply ingrained, even still, in the lobbyists who then promote this plant-based, high-carb, high-processed food eating. We're going to have author of the book, The Great Plant-Based Con, on the show later in June, actually. She's agreed to come on the show. Her name is Jane Buxton. If you want to read up in advance, you have a month. The book is called The Great Plant-Based Con. Fantastic book about how much business and lobbying there is to lie to you about what you should be eating. So read that. But we are going to move on now. We have another story to get to. We're going to talk about whether or not Portugal should pay reparations and to who for their role in the Atlantic slave trade. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Genucel, because listen up, ladies and gentlemen, Genucel is celebrating their 25th year anniversary by giving you an extra 25% off their already awesome Mother's Day sale prices, making this Mother's Day sale Genucel's biggest sell ever. Now, right now, Genucel's best-selling, most popular package features Gen 90 for immediate results in minutes and top-selling under-eye bags and puffiness serum for over 70% off. You can save big on all Genucel top-selling products for a younger, more youthful-looking you. Troubling forehead wrinkles and fine lines, get those gone. Skin redness, dark spots, gone, and you see those pesky bags and puffiness disappear right before your eyes. Genucel guarantees that you'll see results in less than 12 hours or your money back. So celebrate that special woman in your life this Mother's Day. That's right, guys, tomorrow's May when you realize, uh-oh, Mother's Day is coming up just a few days. Get the world's best skincare at a once-in-a-lifetime price for a limited time, 70% off plus an extra 25% off for their anniversary discount. So go check out Genucel's Mother's Day package at genucel.com/redacted. One more time, get a free spa box and two bonus gifts plus free shipping, genucel.com/redacted. Should Portugal pay reparations for its role in the slave trade? Well, that's what the president said recently. Marcelo Rebelo de Sousa said that Portugal should pay the costs of slavery, prompting a heated debate inside Portugal. Portugal did trade slaves, more than 6 million Africans, but not just Africans, also Asians and Indians. This practice ended in the 1700s and was outlawed in the 1800s. Joining me to discuss this is political scientist and Portuguese, Alexandre Guerreiro. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Natalie.
So how many Portuguese do you know who have slaves right now?
None. As far as I know, none. Absolutely none. And since several decades, no one, or even more than one century, no one has any kind of slave. Okay, we can use... the kind of sign or symbol to refer to some kind of work as being slave work, but not slaves in that kind of sense that the president decided to use.
So what is the response to this inside of Portuguese politicians and political scientists?
What I see is that we have at least a huge majority tends to reject and to abolish this kind of thought, according to which we need to compensate former colonies, not only for the slave trade market, but also because, for example, Brazilians usually mention this situation, that we should repay all the gold that we took from their countries, as if Portugal never invested one single pound of gold in their countries, or if Portugal never gave back what Portugal also took from there. And in the end, I never thought that I would live the 50th anniversary of the 25th of April, 1974 revolution, thinking about paying out of my pocket any kind of compensation. We don't know how much, when, where, how, and even to whom, for past events that obviously I am not oblivious to in the history of Portugal, although I'm proud of being Portuguese. And this is some kind, this started with some kind of woke wave, trying to put pressure on states to pay back for all the sins and all the bad things they did in the past. But if we start thinking about that, maybe we should start first by focusing on the roots of slavery. And usually the speech in the mass media only focuses and targets on the European participation with their former colonies. But for example, you are American. You and Clayton, both of you are American. How come didn't any of you or any other American citizen decided to make exactly the same pressure towards Great Britain?
Right.
Britain colonized the United States. Why we don't see this kind of pressure? Why we don't see, for example, the African countries putting pressure, for example, in Brazil, knowing that Brazil, after the independence, was the main focus and the main source of slaves, not only for the African continent, but for everywhere else in the world. And they were independent back then. So we don't witness and we don't watch about this kind of speeches.
Right. And it also... it has a time frame with which we decide to pay attention to it, and it won't go beyond that time frame. So, for instance, the Portuguese were colonized first by the Moors and the Barbary pirates from North Africa. So should they ask for reparations first? Why is there only this time frame, do you think?
Yes, and also the Roman Empire.
Yes, that's right.
Here in the Iberian Peninsula, they used to have slaves. They used to exploit and to explore all natural resources and even the human resources from those places that were under their jurisdiction. We don't see and we don't hear about this kind of speech against these kind of former rulers just because there is some kind of speech built against the white European man or the Caucasian man that's evil for the humankind and always make bad things to the humankind. So that's why it's only focusing on only this part, as if slavery only started in the 15th century. But let me also remember you and everyone who's listening to us about a person, a man called Mansa Musa. He was the king of the kings. He was the richest man that has ever lived in Earth since there are human beings inhabiting the planet. And he was from Mali. He was the king, the black king from Mali, and he was the richest man. And most of his richness relied not only on the gold that they had, gold reserves that they had, but also on slavery. He earned a lot of money from slavery. And I don't see anyone blaming Mansa Musa for his direct interference and his direct influence on the slave market worldwide, even before the Portuguese came and arrived, or the Spanish, they arrived to the African continent. I never hear nothing related with this. And also, there's a curious episode that we should also have in mind about Queen Nzinga from Angola. She was the queen of one of the tribes from Angola. And it, according to the reports that are actually official reports, when she went to a room in Angola to meet with the Portuguese ambassador back then, because he was seated in a chair, she refused to sit on the floor, and she asked one of her slave women to stand there and make a chair, a human chair for her. Like, for example, people should have the same idea of that scene between Paula Abdul and Borat on the movie, where they sit both in a Mexican. So this is the reality. Most of these populations and most of these kingdoms, they always got a lot of money from slavery. But it's as if only the Portuguese, the Spanish, and the British invented and created slavery, and as if it was actually something that still lasts until today. I want to remember everyone, the first country to abolish slavery in the entire world, it was Portugal, 1761.
Right. I mean, have you ever read the Bible? There's slaves all over the Bible, and that has nothing to do with Portugal. It's interesting to think about why the world never demands any reparations from Africa when, like you said, the Africans were also made wealthy for trading their own people. I was recently reading Coleman Hughes' book, The End of Race Politics, and he talks about how the Arab world traded as many as 14 million Africans, but they're never asked to pay reparations. And when he went to visit a friend, he said, friends from Ghana and Nigeria, and he said, is there any guilt among West Africans about capturing, keeping, and selling other Africans? And they said, no, it's taught to us, but as a neutral fact. And I think, this is me saying this, that when it is taught as a history of humanity, not to be blamed on any groups, but to collectively feel like, look, we're past that, then we can all build from that rather than just create groups of victims and colonizers. And that reflects poorly on the Portuguese people right now. What do you think of that?
Yes, I totally agree that this is part of the past. And that approach that you said concerning the slavery coming from not only from West African countries or kingdoms, but also from Middle East and any many other areas in the world, we should deal also with our responsibility as Europeans and former colonizers in the same way. It's part of the past. Presently, we all agree that we should condemn slavery. We should just tackle and address slavery wherever it is happening presently. For example, take a look at Libya. Take a look at the Maghreb region, how it works for slave markets in the 21st century. We should be against all that kind of situations concerning slavery everywhere in the world. And that's presently where the Portuguese are at. If we are proud of slavery, no, we are not. But back then, it was considered to be normal. And after several years, like I told you, Portugal was the first country to abolish slavery in an official way, 1761. Then it continued to move forward with the years going and passing by, adopting other instruments, also implementing and enacting those instruments on the ground. And it helped us to be today the first country to abolish slavery. So I think we should be proud of that, but also we should not use it to forget that we were part of that. But it was 400 years ago. It was considered to be normal. Thanks God, as part of the humankind, we developed, we progressed, and now we condemn it in all kinds of circumstances. But presently, probably because Europe is probably one of the richest and more developed continents in the world, and we have people of Caucasian origin, probably because of that, presently what we hear is that kind of speech insisting on blaming the former colonies from Africa, present in Africa, in the Americas, and even in Asia. For example, I can tell you that when the Portuguese were affected and had to face the Dutch invaders in Brazil, the Portuguese actually got the support from the native Brazilians there. Both of them gathered and they fought the Dutch. Why? Was it because the Portuguese were there just using the native Americans from South America only for their own purpose and their own end just to explore them? Or was it because actually there were also good things? And when you witness, if you see, for example, all the churches, all the legacies that the Portuguese left in Brazil, in former African colonies, you see that in the end you have schools, hospitals, churches, roads, which are still active and present in those countries. If I'm saying that colonialism is good, no, but we were not only just taking the resources. We wanted to share it with the people.
Now, the Reuters article about this topic says that Portugal has, quote, failed so far to confront its past and little is taught about its role in the transatlantic slavery in school, to which I said, has this lady ever been to Portugal? And I looked it up. She lives in Portugal. It just made me laugh because I have kids in school and absolutely they do learn this here in Portugal. Maybe she doesn't have kids. Why would anybody say this? It is taught in schools in Portugal.
Sadly, it is taught in schools to make us feel guilty about our own history. But we cannot feel guilty about events that took place several centuries or even over 1,000 years ago. We cannot feel guilty for that. It was part of their history. The proof or the evidence that actually we became better as a community, as a civilization, is this, is that presently, into 2024, we do not accept slavery as acceptable among humans. Portugal is probably one of the countries that makes more efforts in order to integrate foreigners and migrants here in the country. We provide all the possible benefits that they can have. So we have very strong rules and laws against racism, so on and so forth. We are not saying that slavery was ever good in the past. One thing is it was profitable, but it is not acceptable today as being a good thing for the kingdom, because we did not depend on that to become an empire like we were. It was only a piece of that mechanism. Yes, it was bad, but I think that over 150 years since it was officially and definitely abolished slavery here, we are proud of it. And to be honest, we have already passed that part. But there are people who want to spread that kind of word in order to make Europeans feel guilty just because they are Europeans, just because we are white, just because in our history we were colonizers. It's history. It's history. And thanks God, as a civilization, we got over through that.
Right. And he's only mentioning the president. And the president in Portugal doesn't have a lot of legislative power. That power lies with the prime minister and his party. But he's not mentioning any of the Asians that were also traded by the Portuguese. So you can see it's pandering, political pandering. So why, besides that, why would he say this?
You know, Natalie, actually, his father, he was a member of the Salazar government, as well as he was part of Marcelo Caetano. So during the period of the dictatorship, his father was a member of the government and he always worked for the cabinet. And he also had an important role in Mozambique as governor there in Mozambique, which means that I don't know if he feels any kind of guilt for what his father did there. I don't know if that's the case or not. But if he owes anything, I want him to pay. Thanks God he doesn't have any kind of legislative power, because otherwise he's used to say these kind of things. He's a woke president, like many here call him, because everything that sounds like some kind of a soundbite, he uses it in order to have the attention on him, to focus on him. Probably because of that, because he has absolutely no power. And besides becoming president, and before he became president, when he wanted and he tried to become prime minister and even mayor of the city council of Lisbon, he never won any kind of election. So probably he wants more attention. And with this, what does he earn with this? Only international attention. Because I saw a lot of international media outlets echoing his words and echoing his intentions. However, the government, not only the present government, but even former governments, always said, we owe absolutely nothing to our former colonies. We are proud to a certain extent of these links we have, but we are not proud with the rest. For example, if you think about all the Portuguese people who came after the revolution and they lost completely all the goods and assets that they had in the African Portuguese Portuguese-speaking countries in Africa, what they have there, you see that many people came here and they lost everything they had. they lost all the goods, all the property. For example, one of the, if you think of Zimbabwe, for example, with Robert Mugabe and the role he had against former British colonizers there, he sent all people out of the country just because they were white. So there is some kind of this feeling of race behind oppression. And this is what we should target. And this is what we should all be against. Because like I said, for example, in the United States, you don't witness, you don't watch this kind of speech demanding Britain to pay reparations to the United States. And actually, there are a lot of people living there since centuries. And you don't see this existing. Yet the United States were a colony from the Great Britain. And it was not so much long ago when compared, for example, with Brazil, which became independent in 1822. So if you start thinking about this, the president just wants to create some noise around this kind of idea, around this image that we were oppressors there and we need to apologize. We don't need to apologize because nobody from those who are living back then in those moments are present now, and none of us. I'm Portuguese. I don't owe no one any kind of not one single euro for what my ancestors did. Thanks God, we as a part of humankind, we developed a lot on this way of thinking.
Yes, you're right. It just made me feel a little bit sad because the working class people of Portugal have had their economy destroyed for a war they don't want. And now they're being told to reach farther into their pockets for reparations that they had no role in. So it's nonsensical. I knew you would be the right person to make sense of it. So thank you so much. You can follow Alexandre Guerrero on his YouTube channel and as well as on X. And all of that is on the screen. Thanks again for your time for coming on Redacted.
Thank you very much, Natalie. See you next time.
Well, that's going to do it for us for Redacted today. Thank you so much for all your comments and your participation for being here. Hey, don't forget, you can study up on the topics that we're going to present by subscribing to the free Redacted newsletter. Head on over to redacted.inc. You can subscribe totally for free. Put in your email address and then we'll send you an authentication email. And then you will get the Redacted newsletter. A lot of it we use as a little snippet for what we'll talk about in the show. And we try really hard to make sure that you are linked to original sources so that you can read up for yourself, think for yourself, decide how you feel for yourself, and then come here and share it with us on the show. So again, it's totally free, redacted.inc for the newsletter. We really appreciate it. We appreciate you. We will see you tomorrow. Please be here, same time, same place. Thank you, everybody.